John Wakeman, and how old are you, John?
I'm 86.
86.
Coming up 87.
So, what could you share with me about World War II?
Well, when the war was declared against Germany, when they invaded Poland, I was 9 years old. Mm. So, I was one of the many that was deprived of a sort of an education because we spent a lot of time in air raid shelters and things like that. Mm. I lived in a house with my mother and father and my brothers and sisters, not far from the school I was in. And when the air raid shelter, the air raid warden used to go, occasionally I used to run home and go in the shelter at home with my mother. Mm. It was after the war was declared, it was like a quiet period, but eventually the Nazis, they would call them Nazis, because that's what they was at the time, started to bomb and London first, and then they moved to the Midlands and that. I mean, we were vulnerable where I lived because I wasn't far from the Austin, as it was called in those days. And they used to make parts of Lancasters and Spitfires and things in the factories. In fact, there was a what they called a shadow factory built. It was about half a mile long to accommodate these airplanes, wings and parts and things and that. And it was called the East Works, you know, they called it the East Works at the Rotted, But because we were vulnerable, they actually, even though they tried several times to bomb the Leyland, the Austin, they had a unique camouflage that, instead of the normal factory camouflage that they had, all factories sort of painted like as though they were fields and things like that.
Right.
The actual British Leyland, the Austin, I keep calling it British Leyland, it was Austin in the other day.
Okay.
Were painted like an estate.
All right, that's interesting.
There was houses painted on all the buildings with a black patch between. And at that time, during the war, there was an airfield on Austin. Before the war, my father took me to see airplane displays there and things like that. But because it was an airfield there, they painted like a pond. So it was like a park between the
houses.
But because of it, they did try to, and we had a load of warnings, and we spent nearly every night in the air raid shelter when they started to concentrate on trying to get.
Where was the airfield?
On where Flight Shed is now.
Next to the Austin.
Actually, you know Lower Lane and Coughton Park.
Yeah.
Well. There were no buildings down the centre of the.
Where they've still got the MG works now, that's left behind, all that's left of Rover.
That's at Cab 1 and Cab 2, yeah.
Yeah. And then the park's across the road from that.
Well, that was where the airfield was.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. No, that's cool. I was checking the
park.
That was the airfield on there, where they, you know the roundhouse?
Yeah.
Well, the roundhouse wasn't there then.
It's the thing that always makes me curious, because I've always lived around here and grew up around here. I can always remember as a small child, because I lived just off Coombs Lane when I was small, that there used to be Nissan huts all along the top of Coombs Lane. Would that have been connected to the airfield? Would that have been?
No, the airfield was up on the top. You know that if you come down Coombs Lane and that, that it's down in a dip. But the actual buildings are up
So when, well, that's where the Nissen huts were, so that was connected to the airfield, was it?
Yeah, the Nissen huts and the German prisoners of war place was in Coughton Park.
I've wondered about it all my life, what those were, and no one's ever been able to answer.
Yeah,
them.
Well, somebody had to look after the German prisoners, didn't they?
Mm.
So they had that was their accommodation and that, and it was the German prisoners were in Coughton Park. But get back to the story of
okay.
when I was at school and the war started. That there's not much information flung out about what the school children did towards the war effort.
Right, okay, so could you tell me a little bit about that then?
Yeah, well, personally, right, when I was in the junior school, I was allocated to look after the scrap metal room. Because a lot of children were evacuated during the war, I wasn't, I lived still over here during the war and everything. And they had what they called a centre for people to bring scrap metal and everything. All the school railings was cut down because they were metal,
mm-hmm.
and they were put in there, all towards the war effort it was, you know, all the metal that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember moving old motorbikes and things in the room to make room for the things to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there was another room allocated for paper. I've been in the paper room, climbed on the top of the paper room, pushed the top down the back so that we can make more room to let it come in, mm-hmm. right? And when I was in the senior school,
mm-hmm.
During the war, they had what they called dig for victory.
Yeah.
You understand that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, many of the time that I have been called out, given a spade and a fork, and gone to the local nursery school places and things like that to dig the ground up for them,
mm-hmm.
so that they could plant the vegetables and the things like that.
So how old would you have been when you talked to give them spade?
I went to work during the war.
Right.
So I'm talking about 12, 13.
Right, so this is where you say you deprived of an education because there's a war on, you're in
Charles
and
yeah,
you're digging victory and working.
But it's even worse than that because on the dig to victory, most of the parks were ploughed up and potatoes were planted.
Mm.
And for 2 weeks we were pulled out of school to go and help the land girls, the land army girls, to pick the potatoes in Coughton Park.
Right.
We were there for 2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
And because the girls weren't strong enough to lift the bags of potatoes that we picked and filled up onto the trailer.
Yeah.
I had to go and help the girls to lift the bags of potatoes onto the trailer.
You were happy about that? Yeah.
Well,
you did it.
You just did what you were told. You know, or asked to do, you know. But there's none of this ever.
But documented, you mean? Well, that's why we're doing it now. Yeah, yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's amongst other things that that we as children did towards the war effort.
Mm. I didn't know that.
No, well, no.
I knew that.
You know, it's not documented anywhere and that.
There was one thing, I may have been about World War II, where children, because they collect conkers anyway, and there's a chemical in conkers that can be used in ammunition.
Yeah.
I knew that was a thing in World War I.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. Like, I didn't know that you'd have to dig up the park and plant potatoes. And
stuff. As children during the war, after the bombing and the when the planes came over,
yep.
Where I lived behind the house was searchlight in the fields, and also a barrage balloon.
Mm.
You understand a barrage balloon, do you?
No, but can you just explain so I can elaborate?
Okay, well the barrage balloons were a sort of inflated balloon on a cable,
all right,
to catch the planes.
Like a big zeppelin on a string, kind of thing.
Not a string, metal.
A metal cable, right.
Yeah. And they had a pulley that pulled them up and down, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The thing was that because we had all these things all around us, and not only that, at the Leyland there was what they called a decoy area, where there was dummy. We only found this out by crawling towards this. Everything was fenced off during the war. And behind this fence, over by Franklin Beaches there, was this field on a slope with huts and sentries and guns, right. Anti-aircraft guns, not far from the island there. And that was where they're playing to, when they come over and they bomb that.
Right.
And there were dummies.
Huh.
It was a decoy.
Right.
We only found that out because we stood and watched the sentries and said, they're not moving.
Yeah.
So we crawl on our hands and knees over to the fence, as you know, a gang of us and that.
Yeah.
And we're there. But after the air raid and that, I mean, the sky was completely lit up. And I remember the night that they bombed Coventry with the incendiaries and that, and burnt it completely virtually down.
Mm.
And the cathedral was bombed and everything, you know, that's all documented. My father said to us, come and look at this, you know, and we got out of the air raid shelter and we looked across, and even though we lived 20 odd miles away from Coventry, the sky was completely red and lit up like daylight. And with all the searchlights and that, and the bangs and everything and that, you know, but the sky was lit up in things like that.
It's quite a scene. Yeah.
That was the, what happened most nights for quite a long time. Towards the end of the war, it eased off around here. The only people who tried to bomb, they all tried to put in the daytime, the Italians, Air Force, came over to follow the railway line. Because they obviously realised that the Leyland there, the Austin, was on a railway line, and they bombed the railway line.
Okay.
But they missed the factory because they couldn't identify it, because from where they were, it looked like an estate.
Yeah. So clever.
Yeah.
I wonder. I would have liked to see it from an aerial point of view to see.
Yeah, well, the only reason that we could see in its full entirety was when we walked up to the
hill.
Franklin Beaches.
Right, okay.
And looked across.
Mm.
And if you didn't know that the factory was there,
mm.
you wouldn't see it. Mm. You wouldn't be able to see it.
Mm.
But later on in the in the war, they stopped coming and bombing round here, occasionally, just an occasion. The Bristol Road was strafed one did a time with the fighter bombers thing, you know, they strafed all the what's it down there. But the irony of it was the fact that when the war was towards its end, we didn't know it was going to end then, because obviously it's only when it happened. But the irony was that during the beginnings of the war, thousands of children in the area, in Birmingham and all over the country, were evacuated to what they was considered a safe place.
Yeah.
Right? No other country, only Canada, offered to take our children over. And unfortunately, it was the fact that the submarines was getting rid of the shipping and things.
Yeah.
A lot of them didn't survive to get to Canada.
Right.
That's the only country that offered
right.
our children to us. But what happened was, towards the end of the war, they invented the buzz bombs. We called them buzz bombs. They were V1s and V2s. They were sending the Dougal bugs over to London. So the London children that were still in London were evacuated to Birmingham. And that was the irony of the war, that Birmingham area, of course, well, they bombed all the factories, mostly. The only one they didn't get was to Leyland, you know. Lucas's and all those big places, you know, that made war effort things like motorbikes or whatever, you know. Got bombed, but the Leyland didn't. But the irony of it was that because of that situation, we were considered a dangerous area.
So being evacuated to Birmingham is fairly ideal. It's not ideal, is it, at all?
Because the reason I know that was because on my last year at school, I had a fella who was evacuated from London City next to me.
Do you remember his name?
Pardon?
Do you remember his name?
No. I couldn't remember. Vaguely his sight, you know, but the thing was that when you're kids, you know,
yeah. Okay, cool. There's loads of great stories there. That's 15 minutes, so I'm gonna stop it there because I'm sure we could go on.
Bits of shrapnel. That was parts of bombs and shells and things like that. And that was our treasures that we used to. I've got this, what you got. I'll swap you.
Play for keeps.
Yeah. I can remember a thing that was going around our school was the fact that there was a picture of four pigs. They weren't plain colours, they were like had pieces of black and things on them. And what we used to say, you had this thing, you say, she's the biggest pig of all. And they used to look at it and they used to point to one and say no, and then you used to fold it up and it was a picture of Hitler.
That's good.
That's a good note.
I've got that on tape there. All right, pig Hitler.
He's the biggest pig of all.
He is the biggest pig. I remember there's a story, do you know Spike Milligan?
Pardon?
Do you remember Spike Milligan from the Goon? He was in the war, and they handed him a picture of Hitler and said, "This is your enemy," and got him on the train. And he said he searched the whole train and couldn't find him. So that's great. Yeah, so John, that's awesome. I've got you on record before, but I didn't know your name, so I've got two interviews with you now, which is good. But that was with the NCS, I think, so I was kind of hopping in and out, so this is good to actually have.
Do you want to...
No, I'm the one that's paying for the project.
Yeah, so this is Janice's
project.
No, I've spoken to Janice quite a bit. So we're going to be interviewing the Shenley group, which is...
he's from Shenley
group. Yeah. So more people from the...
The sisters whose names I can never remember. Margaret.
Gloria was spoken to one of them.
Margaret. I can't remember.
I don't know.
Margaret, yeah.
Whoever wants to be spoken to, really.
Can we film them?
Look,
I
tell you what annoys me is the fact that.
Do you want me to go and find them?
Yeah.
Children in this country, because of. If they do wrong, you know, even murder.
Yeah.
Because of their age.
Yeah.
They are not identified. Because they're protected, because they're...
Yes, if you're under 16...
They're class of children, right? At the age of 14, a couple of weeks after my 14th birthday, I was working. I was doing a job that belonged to a man.
Yes.
I was doing man's work at the age of 14. Yeah. And we had an understanding that if they were lucky enough to come back after fighting in the war and that, and they survived, then we had to leave our job and give the job back to the person whose job we were doing. And they, at the age of 18, I was learning to kill.
Yeah. So
these people that are, I can't understand the stupidity of it, that we were grown up at the age of 14. Yeah, and we were disciplined and everything because we had to work and we had to go every morning and get to work and 44 hours a week. You know, we used to work 4 days and a Saturday till 12 o'clock, or 4 hours, you know. And at the age of 18, they had to serve the country.
So it's almost like a teenage life didn't really exist. You were a child and then you were an adult. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll tell you what,
from childhood to adulthood very, very quickly, and there's
We used to improvise, we used to all play together.
Yeah.
And we used to play games and teams that they don't play at all now.
No, no, times have changed, haven't they?
You know, Tic Tacs and hopscotches and all this business.
I think they still play hopscotch, they still play, you know, kids play football and rugby and all that stuff.
Yeah, too. Well, we were lucky that we had a field behind our house.
Mm.
And if we get a ball, and we used to play in the field. Mm. The field was owned by the milkman who used to have white horses that used to pull the carts around.
Mm.
During the war, because of the blackout and things like that, all the windows sort of had to be taped up to prove, you know, if they were shattered, then they wouldn't splinter and cause harm.
Yeah.
And things like that, and everything was blacked out. And the buses, they were primitive sort of things, but mostly everything was brought, was delivered and everything around on a horse and cart.
Mm.
Coleman, everything was delivered around grocery people,
mm.
all sorts of people used to deliver things on a horse and cart. Mm. Ice cream used to come up and they used to, Italian like it was. And mm. used to. I played football.
Mm.
Or they played coach, you know. I played football against the German prisoners of war.
Really? Okay, hold on. Let's get that one second.
Well, hang on, listen to the story first.
Okay, so it's already recording.
Because you might not want to put it on.
That's all right, well, I don't have to. You can.
No.
Mm-hmm.
You put it on for you if you think it's okay.
Oh, let's hear it.
I played football against the German prisoners of war. The Italian prisoners of war were roaming around this country free.
Mm.
They worked on the farms and they had to wear a blue boiler suit with orange sort of circles on the front and the back so they could be identified.
Mm-hmm.
But they were walking around free. There was nobody looking after them or anything. They were trusted.
Mm.
The German prisoners of war had to have somebody just to look after them. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We played them at football.
Mm-hmm.
For their entertainment, right?
Yep.
The following week, it was reported that...
Two minutes, I think. Sorry.
Okay.
It was reported that the Germans had taken our prisoners of war over in Germany into the woods and shot them. And that was the difference between the way we treated
prisoners of war and the Nazis. Yeah.
You know, if you want to put that down...
That's good, yeah. That's a powerful story. All right, John, I have to interview some more people.
Yes,
but yeah, thank you for